Game on 2FM.
With Gillette. Great performances begin with a comfortable close shave from Gillette. Gillette, making men's lives just that little bit easier.
Game on 2FM. Thanks to Blonde and Tracy there for those great summer tunes. It's Monday the 1st of June and this is Game On.
Thought you were going to say July for a minute, Marie. At least you got June out. Coming up today, following racing's return across the water, we catch up with champion jockey turned trainer Johnny Murta.
Plus, we've Irish middle distance running star Nadia Power and the two-time All-Star who knows how to light up a summer, Donegal's Ryan McHugh.
The Kilcar player, McHugh, what a goal that is.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM. Marie, had you a nice weekend? It was glorious sunshine in Kildare. What was Dublin like?
Glorious sunshine as well. I think it was glorious sunshine everywhere. Absolutely everywhere. It was brilliant.
It was. And bits and pieces of sport, I must say. I was looking forward to the weekend. Newcastle came back today, which was good for racing in the UK. It was pretty run-of-the-mill stuff, I must admit. It was far from exciting. Well, it was exciting, but it was pretty ordinary racing. But at least there was some very good racing in France. I mean, the French 1,000 and 2,000 guineas were on in Deauville today. Obviously, they were restaged after all the courses in Paris were closed last week when it was designated a red zone. So the races were moved, and Victor Ludorum was a short price favourite winning called for André Fab in the 2,000 guineas under Michael Barcelona. And Dream and Do for Frederick Rossi gave him his first classic winner when he won the 1,000 guineas under Maxime Guyon by an absolute whisker. Beat Speak the Devil, who was flying home, or Speak of the Devil. And I'm sure Kristen DeMuro will go home tonight in France and think, I wouldn't mind another go at that.
I really enjoyed reading Nick Robson's account of what it was like to be one of only two journalists in Newcastle today. He made a terrible mistake. So before he was due to head in, he sat in his car for 90 minutes and it was obviously really hot. Then he had to go through a temperature check and he very nearly failed it. 37.7. The threshold is 37.8. So he had to go sit under a tree and try and drop it down. And it did drop down to 36.6. So it's lessons there for everyone who will be turning up to these events and hoping to go in as journalists. You need to make sure you don't sit in your car for 90 minutes. He had some interesting things to say. He said that the jockeys weren't really loving the masks, but it's very hot, Ruby, so I can imagine trying to get used to wearing a mask and then throw in the hot weather, that it's not ideal.
No, but wear a mask or stay at home with no job to go to, and I think they'll wear the mask. I'd say they will get used to the mask pretty quick. Yeah, a little uncomfortable, but the case is suck it up and get on with it. But obviously Zodiaco won the first for James Sullivan and Roger Fell, who had a 1-2 in the first. And just before we came on air, Sir Michael Stout and Oisin Murphy had a winner. But look, masks are going to be part of it, and I'd say if that's all they have to complain about, Marie, they haven't got much to complain about.
That's true. I enjoyed your column at the weekend in the Examiner. You're counting down your sleeps until NACE resumes. Siskin, you're looking forward to that one?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Irish guineas Friday week and Saturday week. Obviously, this weekend you'll have the English guineas as well, and that looks like being a cracking race, especially after Victor Ludorum being so good today in Deauville. I mean, he won in a time of 1 minute and 34 seconds, and that really puts it up to Pinatubo, who run in Newmarket next weekend, you know, who was an outstanding two-year-old. So we'll see him on the Roly Mile at the weekend, and the following week we'll have the Irish guineas. So Siskin there, you know, three really top-class colts. I mean, the three classics being run off so closely together, the French, Irish and English versions, it could make for a great clash down the line if the three big guns can all go and win.
You made some good points in your column just about people's perception of racing and also the resumption of racing and how quick it happened. And you referred to the freelance self-employed and minimum wage workers within the industry and the fact that they make up a sizable portion of it. But it's not kind of a part that we talk about. We kind of talk about the top, the elite, and tend to focus on that. It wouldn't be like us.
No, it wouldn't. But that's the same in every sport, Marie. I think when you look at the finance of every sport coming up now, the elite will always survive, but the elite aren't the majority. And I mean, all jockeys are self-employed for a start. Most trainers, whilst they might operate as companies, are self-employed. They would have had clients to keep them ticking over through the period. But Yeah, people. A lot of people would have been under pressure, and most people are freelance. So getting back and getting this industry moving was a huge thing. You see racing as the sport, but it's the front, it's the top of the pyramid, and it's the shop window for what's a huge industry. And even you look at something today like Dream and Do winning the French 1,000 guineas. The fact that she is by a stallion called Sayuni. Sayuni will have a lot of stock going to the sales in the next month. That will enhance their value. So everybody at home with a Sayuni foal, yearling or two-year-old was screaming Dream and Do on to win the French 1,000 guineas today to enhance the value of what they have. So it's a huge industry. People see the wealthy at the top, but the wealth, every sport and every industry has to have heavy financial investors or they don't survive. Manchester City, Chelsea, Manchester United, Barcelona. It's the same the world over. And racing has that as well. But that's to keep the people underneath employed. And that's the way the world seems to work.
It also, I think the last few days have shown the benefit, and you pointed this out, of everybody working together in an industry, everybody working, moving towards that one direction of getting things back. And now you're reaping the rewards because racing is back, and over the next few days I'm sure we're going to be talking about it more and more as it becomes a fixture in the sporting calendar, and you know, a sporting calendar that is largely void at the moment.
It is, and racing is lucky in Ireland in the fact that it has HRI in charge and has one person or one organisation pushing it forward. France was the same with France Gallo. I didn't think England would get back moving as quickly as they have. There's so many different parties in England that have to be happy to make something happy that I wasn't quite sure that they get racing back up and running as soon as they did. But you know, you've a lot of, as I said, basically self-employed freelance people who want to work, who need to work to survive. They wanted to get going, and HRI were able to drive the ship in the right direction. So you know, hopefully it'll be a success when it comes back, and there'll be plenty of people who will think racing is cavalier and that they're entitled to do this, and who are they? I don't see it that way. I know it's my sport, but I see it as people who are wanting to push through this time and crisis and move on as safe as they can, but to go about getting back to their daily lives.
We'll talk to Johnny Murtagh about that very, very shortly. It actually kind of makes me focus a little bit then on GAA, no surprise to you, I'm sure, but the fact that there are conversations happening now, Ruby, around when the GAA should come back, and also why the GAA should come back, because although it's an amateur association, we're not looking at professional sport here, it is part of the community though. And I think as we try and feel our way and find our way out of this pandemic, not having the GAA there makes it really hard to get on that road to recovery, because it's been such a constant through hard times. We've seen it bind communities over and over again. So it's kind of hard to accept that we are moving out of it, of the pandemic, of lockdown, when the GAA pitches are remaining closed. And we'll have Mark McHugh on, or Ryan McHugh on, and we'll talk to him a little bit later about that. But it does raise a lot of conversations. They had one on the Sunday game last night with Colm O'Rourke and Dick Clerkin on opposite sides of the fence. Colm thinks that the GAA should come back pretty quickly. Dick feels that we should be cautious about it. But I think my own opinion is that it's very hard to see the light, and when there is no date, when we don't have that hope about the GAA.
It is, and I read the Sunday Independence, I read John Green and Colm O'Rourke, and you know, they both had similar take on their articles, but there was a few pieces in John Green's that I was thinking, like, if you're living in Leitrim where you have and had very little coronavirus, why aren't your clubs open? If you're in Sligo where there hasn't been a case since May 14th, Kerry and whatever the other example was that he gave that I have highlighted here in front of me somewhere, but can't quite, or Donegal, May 19th, you kind of think maybe there should be divisional reopening here, and that it has to start somewhere. And I think, you know, they both made very good points, Colm and John Green. And yeah, I just think that the GAA has been very cautious, and maybe that was needed in the beginning, but I think they're getting left behind. And my worry for the GAA would be that when soccer opens and other sport opens, and I think Colm O'Rourke was alluding to it, a lot of people could be lost to the GAA, and it needs to keep up if it wants to keep its participants.
Yeah, because, you know, when you think the bad weather at the start of the year, you have kids, I have kids, they didn't play a lot of GAA at the start of the year. There wasn't that much of the academy and nurseries on because of the weather. So as time goes on, we won't feel it till they'll have, you know, the bad weather will come around pretty quickly again, and they could be a year lost to the sport, which is massive for their connection with it, their development, and they're missing the enjoyment of it as well.
They are, but I think our kids are at an age where we'll send them back to do it again next year. We can still control their lives. It was more where Colin was going at 16, 17, 18 year olds, that when they will be lost to, when they stop playing, it'll be hard to get them back playing and they will be completely lost to the sport. And I thought that was a very strong point. And, you know, he was also kind of hinting at then, is the GAA, does it have to go and show what it is, be part of the community, or is it becoming a financial juggernaut? Which does the GAA want? And I think a lot of people need it to be part of the community.
Yeah, I think it's a vital part of the community. And the longer you kind of drive past the lock gates, I think the more that becomes clear. And I think the more people miss it and they need it. And it's just, it's important. And I think at some stage, hopefully in the near future, they're just going to have to make a decision and you know, as you said, Ruby, maybe go around to the counties where the rates of infection are low and go there. But I think another issue that's going to come up as clubs remain closed is the financial issues of running clubs and not having the income. And we're seeing it in professional sport all the time. We saw that Rugby Australia has laid off a third of its full-time staff. They have 47 of their 142 workers have been let go. So there are going to be financial implications to sport not running in time as well.
And you look at the crisis in Welsh rugby, Marie, and what they're facing into. I read that in the papers yesterday as well. 27 million was what they were getting. They're down to now going to get 3 million next year. Scarlets had received 8.5 million. The Ospreys and Blues were getting 6.5, and the Dragons getting 5. They're going to get 500,000 each. The players had agreed to take a 25% wage cut for the 3 months from April the 1st. But what is going to happen there? I mean, how are Welsh rugby going to support four professional teams when their finances are in that sort of a state? And even by the sale of 28% of the Pro 14 to CVC, that's a phased payment. That's not a silver bullet. That's not going to get them out of the hole either. So I think finances across all financial sports or professional sports is going to be tricky. I can see racecourses being under pressure in Ireland. You see rugby clubs rugby teams in Wales. What's coming next? I mean, and that will boil down the GAA clubs as well.
Yeah, we had Sarah Keane from Swim Ireland on speaking a few days ago, and she outlined the same thing, that it's going to be catastrophic for some clubs. Bernard O'Byrne from Basketball Ireland, he's a CEO, he's speaking on Sunday Sport, and he reckons they could have a deficit of €500,000. So it's pretty worrying. And the GAA will be in the exact same thing, because same boat, because clubs need money, membership. They need they need finance to keep going, and without it, as time goes by, it's very difficult to see where all the deficits are going to come from.
They're just going to keep getting bigger and bigger. That's what happens with deficits, Marie. There was some Irish people in action at the weekend as well on the international stage. Killian Sheridan, who plays in the Polish league, he did play at the weekend, even if he was on the wrong end of a 4-1 scoreline. And there'll be a few more guys in action next weekend. Graham Carey, who plays for CSKA Sofia, the Bulgarian league, is up and running next weekend. And Sean McDermott, who's in Norway, and I don't know how to pronounce this, Kristiansund, he plays there. They're back up playing in a fortnight's time. So plenty of Irish guys getting a chance to earn a few quid and get going as well, Marie.
We're going to become experts in all the European leagues while we wait for our own domestic league to get back on.
Yeah, but there's some great players in the Bundesliga, isn't there? Yeah. Even watching the skill and the technicalities. I mean, I was doing the radio last week with Damien O'Mara, and we'd Mark Langdon on the phone, and it was the big game between Borussia Dortmund and Bayern Munich, and Joshua Kimmich scored a beautiful chip. But both Damien and Mark Langdon kind of blamed the keeper. So when I went and watched it after, I was thinking, no way. I mean, that was just a magnificent chip. And that is the beauty of sport. I mean, two guys saw it one way, I saw it the other way, and there you have a debate. And that's what we're missing, Marie, the debate about live sport, about things we don't know about.
Jadon Sancho over the weekend scored a hat-trick for Borussia Dortmund, and when he did it, he celebrated and he pulled up his T-shirt and it had a slogan on it, justice for George Floyd. And I think that the situation in America has caught the interest of everybody. We saw Liverpool earlier today released a photo. They tweeted Black Lives Matter, and they all took the knee in support of the racism that is going on around the world. And it's just a conversation that needs to be had, and it's important to have it. And sport does play a role in it, I think, because people like Liverpool, like Sancho, they're in a position where they can get the attention of people that might not necessarily be tuned into other media outlets or the news, and just might not understand that they have to, that they can be influenced, and they should be influenced by the people who are promoting the slogan that Black Lives Matter, because it's very difficult, I think, to be in the position like Liverpool, like Jadon Sancho, to use your the status that you're held in to spread a message. But I think it's really important that it is done.
Of course it is, and Marcus Thuram did the same when he scored his goal at the weekend. He took a knee like they used to do in the NFL for the national anthem. But Marie, it's not a, I don't think it's a topic anybody is overly comfortable talking about for fear you say the wrong thing, and it's not one that I'm overly well versed on, but it's a huge issue, and how do you wipe it out? How do you stop it? I know we've had this debate before about players leaving the pitch and things like that. I think when players leave the pitch, you're only giving in to what people have said to them. I think the fans have to act. I think fans have to start leaving stadiums and leave those that are shouting racist abuse behind and let the world see who they are.
I think we need all the fans as well that Liverpool have, the fact that they can reach the audience by doing that and reach so many people, it has to be helpful in some sort of way.
It does have to be helpful, and it's sad when you look at what happened in America. It's sad that racism is such a part of society still, and it shouldn't be. But I don't know where the answers are. I think there's definitely people with better ideas in the world who might be able to do something about it than me.
Okay, Ruby. It's very rare that you say someone has better ideas than you, but there you go.
I'm out of my depth here, Marie. Way out of my depth.
Well, what about we go to horse racing then?
That'll do. You want to take a break for us now?
No, because Johnny Murta's on the line.
Hi, Johnny. How are you?
Well, hi, Marie.
How are things?
Very good, thank you.
Johnny, we have racing back in Ireland on Monday week, which is great news. You must be getting your team on the Curra revved up for next Monday, are you?
Well, we have them revved up since March. It's trying to, if I get them revved up any more, they'll be over the top before we start. But no, we've been ready a while. We just had to ease off them a little bit then. And, you know, as I said, then put the finishing touches to them there this week, just the last few gallops. And I think, like everyone, there'll be no excuse this year to say that, oh, my horses are behind, they're not fit enough. I think everybody will be out with the blocks, firing on all cylinders. It leads to next Monday in Naas, and it's going to be for some very, very, very competitive racing in Ireland, which it is anyway.
It is, and it's obviously going to come shooting out of the blocks in the UK as well. You had Newcastle today, which was pretty low-grade stuff, but like on Friday, 4 days away, you have the Coronation Cup, where you'll have Guyatt, Defoe, Stradivarius, Anthony Van Dijk. Like, we've big names out straight away, which is great for racing.
Yeah, it is. You know, everybody, you know, it does usually start off a little bit slow. I think, you know, Guineas Weekend in England is probably the start of the big flat meetings. You know, Punchestown finishes, the Guineas rock up in Newmarket, usually the first weekend in May, and that's when racing really starts, and when you see the big names out. But it's, you know, we've lost so much time now. The big names are going to be coming thick and fast over the, you know, as you say, this weekend alone. I think there's 5 or 6 Group 1s on offer, so people won't have to wait long to see all the good horses, to see which horses have trained on from 2 to 3, and you know, it's going to be an exciting time. I read a piece there that you said that racing is going to be one of the first sports back. So, you know, if we can't pick up people watching racing now, you know, we are in trouble, because it's the only sport in town, and you know, we have to do our best to show it off to what it is: brilliant, competitive, trust, cutting trust, nobody giving an inch. Top horses, top jockeys, top trainers. That's what's going to be an offer straight away.
It's it's actually going to be a great opportunity, really, Johnny, isn't it? Like you mentioned, all the eyeballs on the sport, and you know, we're all kind of people that don't watch racing all the time or are in the market for something new now to kind of latch onto a new bandwagon, and racing could be that.
It could, and of course you can bet on it as well, which is always a good sign. So people get attracted by that as well. If you back a winner, it's always a big help. If you back a loser, then it's not so good a game. But no, I think we've a great sport. I think sometimes we know we have it ourselves, but we kind of take it for granted. But now you'll have different people looking at it. Like, there's nothing better this weather riding out on the Curragh, riding a horse 35 miles an hour, just to feel the power they have, the stride they have, the energy, the will to win some of them have. You know, and you're going to get to see all that, and everybody's going to get to see all that live on TV over the next, you know, the next number of weeks before any other sport comes back. So I think racing is a bit of a drug. When you get bitten by it, you get drawn into it, and it's very hard to go away from it. So yeah, you're right, we have a great opportunity now to showcase it. We say we're the best in the world. I believe we are. And when we come back next Monday, you're going to see again, it's nice, it's not the top stuff, but there'll be two-year-olds and three-year-olds, horses running, having their first run in nice next Monday, and they could go on to be superstars, because that's the standard of horses we have at the moment. They're all ready to run, and, you know, yeah, we are really looking forward to it in racing.
Johnny, I know you're a massive sports fan, and anyone that has followed your career knows that as well. Is racing your favourite sport?
Is it my favourite sport? Well, it's my job, so it's kind of... I love all sports. When I was growing up, I was in Meath, so I loved the Ga. You know, my first memory was I wanted to play football for Meath. Then I'd done a bit of boxing, so I was boxing then. Came up to Kildare, and I rode Rocket Gibraltar for Alex Ferguson, so I was a Man United fan, so I'm into soccer then, so... No, I'm a bit of all-rounder. Is it my favourite sport? Watching it, no. I'd much prefer to watch the hurling, the football, good soccer match. And now, after watching Michael Jordan, sure, we're all basketball experts now. So, but any sport, when I come home in the afternoon or when I come in the evenings, I don't watch, you know, not much else, only sport. And it's, you know, it's great to see it played at the top level. And, you know, you'd be sometimes saying to yourself, I wonder how the top jockeys would get on, like the top rugby players kicking the ball over the bar or getting that push. Or, you know, the top lads, they're kind of all are the same. They've all got that little bit of something about them that I think if you threw them into any... those scenarios, they'd be able to handle it.
You definitely had it, Johnny. I mean, you won Guineas, you say, on Rocket Gibraltar, Henry the Navigator, and they both came, well, Henry the Navigator did come back to the Curragh to win the 2000 Guineas there. Big pressure, Derby, Sindar, onto Arcs. You had it. But there's been a bit of a change in the guard in the top of the jockeys in Ireland. Obviously, Pat Smullins had to retire through illness. Dunnick has gone training through weight. Who should people be looking out for now on the flat? Who are the next stars of jockeys on the flat?
I think we have a lot of good young lads coming along. Colin Keane is, you know, he beat Pat Smullen there. He reminds me of a young kind of Pat Smullen, quiet, unassuming, just goes about his business, gets the job done. Who else have we got? Well, you have Kevin Manning, who's still there with Jim Bulger. You know, he's 50 now, he's still riding as well as ever. He's Bulger's top man. McDonough, I think, Declan McDonough is after slipping into Joseph O'Brien there, so he'll be competitive this year. And then we're just, as you said, we're looking for the young lads. Who's the next young lad coming along? Chris Hayes, Ronan Whelan. Who else is there?
Shane Foley's a huge chance in Jesse's now with Albina and a couple of fillies like that,
Shane Foley, Shane Foley. So, you know, they just have to keep improving. They have to get on the good horses. And when they get the good horses, they have to make sure those opportunities don't pass them by. Because if you don't perform on the big days, you get jocked off. goes on to the next one, and you know as well as I do, you're only as good as your last winner. So when you get those big rides, you need to make them count. But we are very lucky in Ireland. We've got a huge pool of good, good jockeys. The problem is we don't have probably enough jobs for them. So the pie is very small. So when you get that piece of the pie, you better make sure it counts, because it's very, very competitive in Ireland. But that's why when you get a good one here, they can go around the world and can compete with anybody.
We saw Victor Ludorum win in the French 2000 Guineas earlier in Deauville, and he clocked a minute 34, Johnny, so he was racing over 40 miles an hour all the way. He'll have Pinatubo this week, Siska next week. Do you think there could be a really good crop of three-year-olds?
I think Godolphin had a very good crop of two-year-olds last year. They were kind of the power last year, you know. Victor Ludorum today was good. He was very impressive. I think Pinatubo in this week's Guineas in Newmarket, he's the one they all have to beat. He ran a little bit below par, I feel, in the Dewhurst, which was the end of last season. It was his last run. But the race I seen him run at the Curragh when he won the National Stakes by 9 lengths, you know, that was a superstar performance. I think they're a good bunch of two-year-olds. Aidan's horse got a little bit closer to him in Newmarket, and you know, Aidan will have them all firing on all cylinders now this time of year. He always has them ready for the Newmarket Guineas. But I still think Pinatubo, he's a class act. He's tough, he's hardy. He's obviously not a very good workhorse at home, because he always comes into the races underrated. But I like those kind of horses. They last longer. They last longer than the superstar workers. You know, those horses that work really well at home and they burn up the gallops. Well, Pinatubo doesn't burn up the gallops, but when he comes to the races, he always seems to have a little bit more and pulls it out of the bag.
The Morning Glory Flash Harries, they're no good to anybody. You want one like Pinatubo. And the other one that strikes me that could be like him is the filly Albina. I mean, she looks like she takes her ages to get going, and then she takes off. Do you think she could be a superstar filly? I mean, she looked unlucky last year at the Breeders' Cup as well.
Yeah, no, Shane Foley, very happy. When I spoke to him the other day, and I asked him how she's done over the winter, and he said she's done really well. And that's what you need. You know, that's what you need. You need those horses to improve. They can be great last year, but they still have to improve 10 pounds this year to be the real deal again. So she has the size, she has the scope, she has the breeding. She's, you know, the Niarchos family, they've bred wonderful horses over the years. So she could be, you know, a real superstar in the making. I think she's staying for the Irish Guineas. And I think Jessica Harrington, who had a great bunch of two-year-old fillies last year, is sending Missile over to the English Guineas, because you cannot run in both this year, I don't think. You know, you have to pick. Before English Guineas the first week in May, Irish Guineas the last week in May, so you could do both. But, you know, now no chance. English Guineas this weekend, Irish Guineas next weekend. And with the travel, I'm not sure anybody will be able to do that. So it's changed a lot. So by the 13th of May, you'll have a French Guineas winner, an Irish Guineas winner and an English Guineas winner. And won't it be great if they rock up somewhere during the year? Three Guineas winners taking each other on.
That could be Goodwood, could it? The Sussex Stakes, would that be the likely place?
It could be Goodwood, yes. It could be Goodwood, or maybe, where's the next big three-year-old? Well, they won't make Ascot either. Ascot's a bit close. They usually all meet up Ascot in the St. James's Palace, but that could be a little bit tight too. So, yeah, Goodwood. Sussex Stakes and Goodwood could be a race to savour.
Johnny, you would ordinarily have been in Newmarket working for ITV if you didn't have runners. Obviously, with the quarantine rules, you can't take up that role, can you?
No. There's no chance of going over there this week. But listen, I wouldn't fancy travelling at the minute anyway. You know, I'm quite happy to be home here. Racing is starting, and just, I do feel we're going the right way. In another couple of weeks, 2-3 weeks, hopefully Everton will be starting to get back to normal, and we might get over there for ITV later in the year.
Have you any one horse of your own for our listeners to look out for?
Well, the best horse I probably have is a filly called Know-It-All. I've got a couple of nice three-year-old fillies. I've got a filly called Know-It-All. I've got a filly called Pronouncement. and I have a filly called Siamese. Pronouncement hasn't won yet, but she was third in a listed race, and Know-It-All was unlucky. She finished third in the Group 3. She seems like she's improved from 2 to 3. She's a big girl, so you'd have to think she's improving. So she's a very nice filly. I think we've got a nice bunch of two-year-olds this year. You know, as a bunch, I think we're going to have, you know, hopefully we'll have plenty of winners. But we've got a few, you know, by good sires, Dubawi, Frankel, Knight of Thunder, Sayuni, Loop de Vega. So we would have never had two-year-olds with that kind of breeding before. So hopefully there's a superstar in there.
And well, a bit of luck there is, Johnny.
We're still dreaming anyway that there is, Ruby.
You keep dreaming, Johnny. The world needs dreamers. Thanks a million.
Lovely. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
Best of luck. Bye-bye. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Now, just over a year ago, our next guest, Nadia Power, made her mark on the international athletics scene when she won a bronze medal in the 800 metres at the European Championships. And she has gone from strength to strength since then. Nadia, lockdown aside, it's been a pretty good year for you.
Yeah, hi, how are you? It was going well up until lockdown. I just won my first national senior 800 metre title. So yeah, it was all looking good for the summer and I was really excited. So I guess like every other athlete, I'm pretty disappointed at the moment.
I can imagine. But for someone like you, Nadia, who had been going so well, but probably a little bit kind of young when you look at like peaking in middle distance, do you think maybe the extra year will propel you to perhaps qualify for the Olympics?
Yeah, I have to look at it like that. I guess looking at this summer before I knew the Olympics was postponed, I was mainly looking at European Championships because I had got the qualifying time, so I was ready to kind of do my first senior champs. But I definitely had an eye on the Olympics, but I knew I was an outside chance. So now it's all changed and, you know, I want to give my best next year. It is a lot, so I think, you know, it's not an outside chance anymore. In my head, it's a goal, and I just think that's the way it has to be if I want to give myself a chance for it.
Nadia, I know there's been plenty of confusion in the roadmap around athletes and what training they can do and where they can go back to and what they can focus on. And I know you like setting yourself goals. How have you found trying to train during the lockdown? And do you look at athletes in other countries getting out and think, God, they're getting a huge advantage on me?
Yeah, my training has went really well. Like, I think I've definitely made the most of my situation. But, yeah, it's definitely been tricky. I think with social media, it's really tricky looking at other athletes and thinking, oh, well, they have their training group in that country, or in that country there's a gym open and they have physio access. And it's been something I've kind of had to work on throughout the lockdown and just kind of tell myself, you know what, you're making the most of your day in your situation and that's the most I could do. But it has been tricky, but I'm kind of looking back, I'm happy with what I've done, with what I had.
So where have you been training, Nadia?
So I've been training just in local parks and, you know, on the roads, and, you know, it seemed perfect. I'm lucky I'm not like a sprinter, I guess, kind of a field events, because, you know, once you're 800 and up, you can keep fit. There's so much work to be done on grass and on roads. So I do hill sessions as well. So it hasn't been that bad, and I haven't really felt like I've lost fitness. I've also been able to do gym sessions in my back garden, and I bought a spinning bike as well. So yeah, I'm happy that I could stay as fit as I could. But I guess, yeah, definitely eager to kind of have more facilities open and have access.
Your coach, Enda Fitzpatrick, I know since you joined him, you've dropped back to 800 and you've made great improvements going forward. You have a time of a PB of 2 minutes and 2 seconds, and you're hoping to knock the 2 seconds off it. Where do you think you can find the improvement to do that?
I think speed for me. I ran 1500s all through secondary school, so I definitely have the endurance down. But yeah, no, it's definitely speed I need to work on. But I'm in a great position, I think. I really haven't tapped into my speed, and even to get into 202 last year, I don't really think I did. You know, I don't have an impressive 400 time at all, which a lot of 800-metre athletes do. So I think there's a lot of room for improvement there, definitely. But I guess, as well, I would like to do more 15s in future as well, because I think I have a lot of potential there as well.
Nadia, making the step up from juniors to seniors is challenging for a lot of people, but you seem to be there now. Would you say you are?
Yeah, it definitely is challenging, but I think I've navigated it really well. I've always been there and there and about. You know, I've won a lot of All-Irelands, but never really ran kind of crazy fast times. So last year was kind of my breakthrough. I think college has really suited me and moving to Enda has really suited me. So I think where a lot of athletes fall back in that transition, I've kind of thrived.
I know you've got Enda, but like, what, you're making it sound very easy there. And I think most people know it's not easy at all.
Yeah, no, it hasn't been easy. It definitely hasn't. I went on scholarship to America straight after school thinking, you know, I could take on the world there, and it went very badly for me, and I came back after 4 months. So I did a bit of a reset and I just adapted to DCU well. But it was also a conscious effort by me to say, look, I want to give this everything and focus a little bit more. And I think I kind of told myself, you know, I'll give it everything in college and then, you know, I'll just start a job if you know, I'm not really ready to make it a senior. But I've surprised myself and I feel like, you know, I am kind of running senior times, as you could say now. So I'm in a nice position.
When you go to America on scholarship and it doesn't work out, it must take a while for you to get your confidence back.
Yeah, that was really tough for me, like, especially kind of telling everyone, oh, I'm going off to America for 4 years and I'm back after 4 months. So I guess I was definitely down and I was a little bit embarrassed. But starting to work with Enda and going to DCU then after that just gave me the boost I needed and kind of the fresh start. And yeah, it's worked really well since.
Does it help that there's a good tradition of the middle distance running here and you have some good competitors to look to as well?
Yeah, no, of course it does. And it's been really cool kind of racing them and getting to know them, like getting to know people like Shifra, Claire Butner and Kira McGean just over the last year or so and kind of lining up in a race with them. You know, I looked at them when I was younger and at times definitely thought, oh, I'll never be able to race them or never be near them or stuff like that. So it's been a boost. And I think the middle distance community is so, so supportive in Ireland. So I really get on with everyone I compete with as well.
Nadia, I read where you approach races a bit differently now compared to the way you used to approach them in a mental way. You go thinking that you can compete and you're entitled to be there, whereas before you went wondering should be there and knowing what could go wrong. Where did you find that change in attitude?
I think I just hit a breaking point maybe. I think it was like 2017 where I was just saying, well, why was I expecting that race to go badly, even though I've done every bit of training I could? So I just kind of reassessed myself mentally and said, look, I need to expect things to go well. I'm doing all the work. It's a waste if I don't kind of expect things to go well. And I started working with Jessie Barr as well. She's a sports psychologist last year. So that definitely gave me an extra boost too. And I think I turned that kind of weakness into one of my strengths just in time for last summer, and I can really kind of look back at my Europeans last summer and my whole season and know a lot of it came from that improvement I made mentally.
And do you think the drop from say 1500 back to 800, the different tactical aspect of an 800 metre race, do you enjoy the mental thoughts of that, the working out a race, how you're going to get your best time?
Yeah, I think I'm finding it really refreshing just to do an event. I did just years of 1500s and found it a little bit like I was disappointed a lot, especially I made the European under 20 final in 1500 and I'm disappointed with my outcome. And changing events has just been really refreshing and exciting to me, and I've surprised myself with how good I was at it. So yeah, I've just enjoyed it. But yeah, hopefully more potential for 15s again maybe in a few years.
Nadia, over the weekend, I think we've all been watching the scenes unfold in America. And then you caught my attention after Jean Apke-Moses gave a recent interview. She revealed that she was consistently faced the question, why is there a black girl on the Irish team? You retweeted and you said that your mother had to warn you to avoid looking at comments under pictures or articles where you're wearing the Irish vest, and that you were really grateful to Gina for coming out and saying how she was feeling and what had happened to her. What's your experience been like?
That's true about my mom saying that, so I guess I have avoided comments. But luckily, in sport anyway, I've never directly faced any racism, but outside of sport, I have like faced a little bit and had like racial slurs shouted at me. But to be honest, not often, and I'm lucky in that way. But I guess, you know, given my dad is from Sudan, I'm definitely hyper aware to it, and it just kind of meant a lot to me to have Gina be open about it and do that article, because, you know, it's something I'm not self-conscious of, but I'm aware people comment on, and I'm kind of expecting at some point it might be an issue with me.
That must be hard, though, kind of living your life waiting and almost expecting this negativity to come towards you.
Yeah, I guess what we're seeing from the last few days is that's how it is. And I think a lot of people are realizing that the problem is worse than we thought. And but yeah, I wouldn't say it's hard. I think I'm lucky that I haven't experienced that much in Ireland. But at the same time, I wonder, is that because I have one Irish parent? And then that's kind of frustrating to me in another way, because, you know, why should I be treated differently to Gina? We're both Irish. So that's kind of frustrating in another way.
We mentioned at the top of the show about Jadon Sancho's statement, and also Liverpool taking the knee and tweeting out the picture. Just from being a sports person, when you see other sports people kind of make these statements and take these stands, do you think it's important, and how does it make you feel?
Yeah, no, it's been so empowering seeing people care. Like, I know a lot of people say they're not racist and wouldn't say anything, but I think it's gone a little bit further now, and people want to do something about it and are really happy to acknowledge things. So seeing stuff like that is actually really empowering for me and means a lot, and I feel really hopeful for the future.
So you think it's kind of important for us to even have these conversations here now on radio, Nadia?
Oh, 100%. And that's kind of why I was so eager to retweet that article. I was like, that's a bit of an elephant in the room, because, you know, it's something that we've all seen the comments and we've all heard racism in sport and outside, but like, let's talk about it and have a conversation and just, you know, see how we can all do better.
It's funny, I feel so awkward talking about it, because I don't know what's the right thing to say. I don't know what I'm allowed to say, and I'm purely afraid of saying something wrong. I don't think it's easy to talk about it because you're so afraid of saying the wrong thing. Well, I'm so afraid of saying the wrong thing anyway.
Yeah, no, I to be honest, feel awkward a little bit about it too. But I think it's time and to talk about it. And, you know, if you're making an honest effort to educate yourself and kind of see, you know, have I done anything in the past, or should I be doing more to stand up to it in the future? I think, you know, we can all be happy with that. And, you know, people shouldn't be afraid of accidentally saying something, you know, if their heart's in the right place. They just want to learn. And I think the phrase that's been going around a lot on the internet over the last few days is people need to not just be not racist, but actually actively anti-racist. So I think that would be really, really positive.
I think as well, Nadia, when you look at the Irish teams coming up over through the underage ranks and on the international stage, that I think it helps, because we see then that Ireland is a multicultural community, and we all get more comfortable then with the conversations that we have. And also we get, as you said, almost empowered to challenge behaviour.
Yeah, no, it's great to see. And, you know, we are going to see more of it over the next few years. We're going to see more diverse looking Irish teams, because, you know, Ireland is more diverse than it used to be 20 years ago. So it's natural some of those kids are going to grow up to be sports stars. So yeah, I think it's great to start having the conversation and being aware of it. But also at the same time, let's hopefully just not leave it to this kind of week when it's the big topic, and let's just bring it forward.
Yeah, that is very important. And also what's very important is your career, Nadia. What is next? When can we see it and where can we see it?
God, I really hope some races this summer. The World Athletics have said that nothing we do this summer can qualify us for the Olympics. So in that way, I've taken the pressure off. But yeah, I want to do some time trials at the very least, even if races don't take place. But we are hoping for nationals in September, all going well with the coronavirus restrictions being lifted. So yeah, hopefully a little bit this summer, but let's hope for next year being a big year.
So if not, we'll see you on the roads, in the parks, getting your training done.
Yeah, that's it, exactly.
Nadia Power, Irish athlete, thanks so much for joining us.
No problem. Thanks for having me. Bye-bye.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Marie, I felt like I learned something listening to Nadia.
Yeah, she was very giving, I think, and very honest. And you're right, it is a very uncomfortable conversation to have. And it is good to have them because it pushes us out of our comfort zones and forces us to have these conversations. And I think that we become educated then from listening to her and how she feels, because Nadia is the one in the situation. She's the one that has to deal with it and live it. And I think the important thing to take away from that conversation is that we don't just have it on a week like this, that it's something that we have more often and regular, and then it becomes part of the conversation.
Yeah, I agree. I know, like, I would have always said, look, I'm not racist, but it's to be anti-racism was a much better point and a much better way of putting it, I think.
Yeah, good to learn something on a Monday.
Every day's a school day.
Now it's time to turn our attention to Gaelic games, and I am delighted to say that we are joined by two-time All-Star winner from Donegal, Ryan McHugh. Ryan, how are you?
I'm very good, Marie. Yourself?
I'm great. And I have a very important question, because I've been thinking about this over the weekend. I'm wondering, is isolation in Donegal in the sunshine as idyllic as I imagine?
It's not the worst, definitely. You know, we're very blessed at the minute where we're living. You know, don't get me wrong, it's not ideal. We can't travel as much as we want, but we're very blessed that we have a lot of nice open areas around us, you know, so we can actually, within the 5K, we have a lot of areas that we can go to, beaches and stuff that we can get to. So thankfully, it's not the worst time at the minute.
I have a much more important question, Ryan. I know you work for Austin Knowledge. They're a huge fertiliser company. My grass is dying before my eyes. Any solution?
You've cut it 50 times in the last 2 weeks.
Oh, gee. I think a lot of people are the same, to be honest with you. No, anytime you need anything, we up in Kilkenny. We make a seaweed fertiliser for grass. We do. And it helps promote the grass. It's very good for the stuff on the news. So anytime you need anything, get in touch. No problem at all.
There you go, Ruby.
Seaweed on my grass. That's not so bad. Ryan, where have you gone, or where have you been delivering? I know you do a lot of golf courses, football pitches. Have you been in any exotic places, Augusta or Sawgrass or anywhere like that with this fertiliser?
Would you believe I see myself and my boss, Stephen Geller, about 2 weeks into lockdown, we were supposed to go to Turtle Beach. So, you know, we were actually supposed to go out there and meet the greenkeeper, Chris, out there, and we're going to hope to get a play and stuff. But no, we're very fortunate as a company. We ship all over the world and we sell all over the world, and because of that we get to see a lot of the biggest places. Golf courses, as I said, would be our biggest market, but also do a lot of the pitches. Crow Park would be a customer of ours, the Emirates, the Bernabeu.
Ryan, we've been chatting quite a lot about GAA pitches and the fact that they're closed and how they're affecting different communities all around the country because they're not open. What way has it been with you guys? How much are you missing the GAA pitches?
I suppose missing them hugely, you know, around here, to be honest with you, around Donegal, you know, most of the green fields would all be Gaelic pitches, so they are, you know, so it's been very difficult, you know, the fact that you'd be so used to just your daily routine would be go down to the football pitch and stuff and you have time to spare. So unfortunately, we can't do that at the minute, you know, but hopefully, you know, I think hopefully things seem to be getting a wee bit better, and hopefully we'll get back to normality sooner rather than later.
So we don't know really when any championship is going to happen. We're just watching and waiting. But do you think that the GAA pitches should be open?
Listen, I suppose, you know, it's like anything. It's just really tough on the GAA, you know, the fact that nobody really knows, you know, so they're just probably going by the government. I would love to see them open, you know, I can only go by what I'm seeing, you know, people around our local areas have been extremely well. They're keeping their distance, you know, and numbers around Donegal have been down, you know. I don't think we've had a case in Donegal for the last 8 or 9 days. So, personally, I would love to see them open. Listen, I can understand why the GAA have them closed, you know, just to try stop the spread as much as possible. But personally, I would love to see them open.
So what training have you been doing then?
Sort of just individual stuff, you know. I'm fortunate enough, I've got a gym in my house, so I do. So I've been sort of just working on that. And then, as I said, we're fortunate enough where we live that we have roads around that aren't too busy, you know, and there's beaches nearby that you can try to get your running done. So that's really working closely with S&C coaches in Donegal and Paul Fisher and Aaron Kay, you know, so working closely with them and just trying to do as much as possible. You know, it's not ideal, but me from a personal thing. I've been trying, you know, just to build myself up, and I've actually looked at this from an opportunity to have to do that, because, you know, other than being so engrossed in actually getting onto the field and playing football that you probably lose focus on other side of things, right? So they're really focused on that, you know.
So what kind of things have you been doing, and what kind of ways are you going to be different then? Are you going to benefit from what you've been doing?
I suppose from my own point of view, is just try to be more powerful, you know. I'm always classed as a smaller footballer, so I am. So just try to build myself up now. I'm never going to be running through four or five players, but just to try to be a bit more physical on the pitch and try to be able to break more tackles and stuff, you know.
Well, I'd say there'd be lots of teams around the place. I wouldn't like to hear that. Ryan, you were always described as a playmaker, someone that brings out the best in everyone around you. How do you practice for that?
Oof, good question. How do you practice? I suppose it's just getting really close with your teammates, you know, with you becoming so comfortable with them, you know, and playing so much with them, and then just practicing and building relationships and training every single night, that you're so comfortable with your teammates that you just know that they're going to do the business when you hit the ball off. You know, thankfully, we're fortunate enough in Donegal at the minute that we've a lot of very exciting players, so it's a joy to play with them, you know.
Ryan, you obviously like scoring goals against Dublin, and you had a trial at Reading as well. Do you think, coming from a guy that played a lot of soccer, attacking becomes more natural to you?
I love getting up the pitch, you know. I suppose I'm classed as a wing half-back and stuff like that, but I do love getting up the pitch and trying to get on the end of scores, you know. From a soccer point of view, I would have played around centre midfield and stuff. Again, just love going forward, you know. I really enjoyed my time over at Reading when I did get the opportunity to go over there. It was great as a 16-year-old to go over and experience a professional sport, you know, where I was always used to the amateur sport. So to go over and experience all that was great, you know. From the goal point of view, I think, you know, I've got a wee bit lucky now from the goal scoring point of view. But I think it's just putting yourself in them positions, you know, really taking a risk and really just having a go and trying to get yourself into positions. And the more positions you get into, the better chance you have of scoring.
Ryan, anyone that knows you would say that you are pretty obsessed with the game of football and you just love it. I'd imagine that a year or a championship passing you by wouldn't be ideal.
No, definitely not. You know, I don't want to lose a year in my career. You know, I can, as I said, I can understand fully why football and why life is moving in a sense has to stop. You know, but definitely has been a blow. You know, to everyone, not just me, but to everyone, the fact that it takes over your life, you know, not like it, or the same as any sport. You know, GAA has taken over my life, and for that to come, you know, to just come to a stop has been difficult. You know, I would have found it a wee bit difficult at the start, just the fact that you're so used to, your week was just planned. You knew exactly what you're doing the days you were training, you know, whether it was pitch or gym, you knew exactly what you're doing. And for all that to just stop, you know, all of a sudden was difficult. But I would have loved to learn with it, you know, and look and listen. Can't wait to get back, and I'm really looking forward to it. But as I said, I can understand why the GAA had to do it.
Right, I'm forever fighting with Marie about the fixture list. If I give you a free hand on the fixtures, give me one thing you do with it.
Well, the fixtures, oh, geez, that's a big question.
How long have we got?
That's your
go
exactly,
on, just throw out one suggestion there.
More games, you know. I think every player, you know, whether it's club or county, you know, more games is great. You know, to be fair, I think the Super 8 has helped that a wee bit, that we are getting more games and people are getting the chance to go see more games. You know, as a footballer, that's what you want to do. You know, as any sports person, you know, training's great and all, but you want to be playing and involved on the biggest days. You know, and I think the more games you get, definitely gives that opportunity.
Well, I have to say, I completely agree with you. The more games we get, the more we have to watch as well. So happy days.
Exactly.
More work, exactly, exactly. More work, less play. More play, less work.
Exactly. As a sports person, all you want to do, is no matter what sport it is to play at the highest level, and the more games you get, the better.
Ryan McHugh, thanks so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. That's all we have time for. Game on 2FM.